Daddy Jazz, the story of growing up with my jazz fanatic father, I called Daddy Jazz.
In the early 1950s, Chicago had a fantastic jazz radio show. It was called Daddy O's Jazz Patio, hosted by Daddy O Daily, and it was the soundtrack of my youth. Actually, I didn't need Daddy O's Jazz Patio because I had my very own Daddy O. I called my father Daddy Jazz because Daddy and Jazz were inseparable. My father's fondest possession was his record player. He kept it downstairs in the finished basement of our tiny split-level house on the south side of Chicago. Other kids grew up hearing their parents play Lawrence Welk, Mitch Miller, Andy Williams, or nothing at all. The driving force in my home was jazz. In fact, you couldn't get away from it. Daddy liked it constant, and Daddy liked it loud. And it was not just any old jazz, but the most progressive jazz to be recorded at the time, the infancy of high fidelity. Daddy had a special relationship with music. He didn't just listen. He climbed inside the notes and traveled along to wherever they led. Jazz was his soulmate. It listened to his problems during hard times and celebrated the good times. He explained to me that a song, the first time through, would be played straight without any deviations. This was followed by a round of improvisational solos based on the chord structure of the song. Here, players would free associate with their instruments, turn their minds loose in the music, and blow the images out of their horns or through whatever instruments they were playing. The musical options and rhythmical choices were limitless. My mother couldn't understand how Daddy could stay in the basement for hours and hours just listening. She would yell his name for dinner, "Hare," her shorthand for Harold. This was ironic since he was bald. "Hare, turn that music down. What are you, deaf?" It's a funny thing, but I don't remember him ever turning down the music. Not because he was insensitive to her. I just don't think he heard anything else when he was into his music. Her kvetching was part of their relationship. I doubt that she ever expected him to turn down the music. Daddy was a jazz snob. He was listening to Chuck Mangione in the early 60s, long before most people had heard of him. In the 70s, the Thad Jones Mel Lewis band was one of his favorites, and so was the Toshiko Akiyoshi Lou Tobacken big band in the 80s. In the mid-90s, he was a big fan of Paquito de Rivera. We saw this band together at Chicago's Jazz Showcase about 6 months before Daddy died in 1995. 3 years later, I asked a young jazz musician what he thought was the most happening jazz today. Paquito de Rivera, he answered without missing a beat. It didn't surprise me. Daddy had the hippest ears around. Sometimes when company was over, Daddy would play one of his favorite jazz records in the background. It was rare for anyone to comment, ask about the music, or even acknowledge that any music was playing at all. At these times, he would give me a special look, and I knew what it meant. After everybody left, he would put it into words. "Tin ears," he would declare, and I would nod. "You can't expect other people to like that music just because you do," my mother would say. "Enough with the jazz already." It's hard to understand my parents' old-fashioned relationship today. They shared little in the way of interests, yet they were utterly devoted to each other and to me, their only child. Even though my mother didn't possess my father's passion for jazz, she knew I did. I started humming the melodies I heard coming from the basement at an early age. After grammar school, I'd sneak into the basement to listen to Duke Ellington's Far East Suite, Miles Davis's The Jazz Soul of Porgy and Bess, and the great arranger Shorty Rogers' The Swingin' Nutcracker. "No Meshuggahners in the basement," my mother loved to tease. "It isn't enough. I had one Meshuggahner. Now I've got two." Rather than feeling left out, my mother was happy my father had someone to share his music with. The only thing she minded was the loudness. On the other hand, it gave her something to kvetch about. "Gail, turn that music down. What are you, unconscious?" Daddy and I got into the habit of listening to jazz together. I enjoyed these sessions tremendously. We would sit in the basement on the L-shaped couches with attached end table, close our eyes tight, and fly away. Sometimes to the exotic fantasy of night in Tunisia, or to Lush Life, Billy Strayhorn's black velvet lament about fast living.
Everything seemed so sure. Life is awful, again, chock-full of hearts, could only be a bore.
We crawled inside the music and tumbled around in the astounding melodic mazes, up and down and sideways. Sometimes the melody would climb so high, only to cascade back down like a waterfall. We would hear a horn being chased away after trying to slide its way in, only to return several bars later, this time with something important to say. Or African percussion barging in on a developing relationship between a soprano sax and a piano. One reason jazz fascinated him was its ever-changing improvisational nature. Jazz musicians are willing to take chances, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. Jazz reassured him that new ideas came and went as easily as breathing in and out and were nothing to be afraid of. He often worked out his business problems listening to music. Daddy pioneered a field in Chicago that flourishes today, brokering second mortgages to banks. Today they call it home equity loans. He proved that many people who paid high finance company rates could obtain their loan from a bank instead at a much lower price. Essentially, he was stealing business from the big finance companies who kept taking him to court, trying to make this type of broker illegal. For most of my adolescence, he was battling these lawsuits. In the end, he fought all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court and won. During these trials, you could tell what kind of mood he was in when he came home from work by the record he played. The Oscar Peterson Trio meant he was in a mellow mood. Miles Davis, Pensive. But if you heard Maynard Ferguson's squealing trumpet, watch out. "Hair, turn that down. My ears are falling off," my mother would holler, especially during her ever-present mahjong games, when the neighborhood ladies would gather to push Chinese tiles around the kitchen table. While I was doing my homework in the dining room, I would see him stumbling upstairs on the way to the second floor, misty-eyed from listening to sad ballads like Paul Horn playing "Here's That Rainy Day." He didn't hear the one-bam, two-crack of the ladies gambling. When headphones came out in the mid-60s, my mother was grateful for the quiet they brought. On the other hand, they took Daddy farther away than ever, to a place where no one could find him, except me. This time, I began reading Downbeat magazine in bed at night. I loved the section called Blindfold Test, where a well-known jazz artist would listen to a cut from a jazz record and have to guess the artist. Daddy and I had our own version of it. He would play a cut from a record, and I would have to guess who was playing. I became hard to stump. He was impossible. I was around 13 when Daddy began taking me to jazz clubs with him. My mother couldn't stand the smoke, So I got to be the only adolescent girl in dark tobacco-filled rooms like the London House downtown, the Sutherland Hotel in the South Side, or the Plug Nickel in Old Town. I was thrilled to be included in these grown-up places. Those legendary clubs are all gone now. Through the 80s and 90s, Daddy and I continued listening to music together, going to jazz clubs and turning each other on to the latest groups to enchant us. My father would make personalized cassettes for me, blending artists and styles, usually with a central theme such as all ballads or songs by one composer. 3 years ago, when I was driving my father home from his radiation treatments, he gave me a cassette he had put together of the singer Johnny Hartman. Daddy died a week later. I played the song We'll Be Together Again from that tape in his eulogy. No tears, no fears. Remember, there's always tomorrow. So what if we have to part? We'll be together again. To admit it, but my first husband was a tinier. I should have known better. Gail, does that music have to be so loud? You're the only one listening, you know. I'm now married to a man who opened himself up to jazz and gets more into it all the time. Together we frequent the Jazz Showcase and the Green Mill. Daddy O'Daly said on the radio that if you get too lost in a song, you might never come back. You just move into this place you found and live forever among the crazy notes. When my husband and I are squeezed into a smoky booth at the Green Mill, that's how I see my father, a blue note rising from a flugelhorn.
Don't let temptation surround you. And don't let those make you bad someday. Some way we both have a lifetime before us. For parting is not goodbye. Together again.